You weren't buying it, were you?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. I'm Bill Radke. Remember, in the heat of the banking crisis a year ago, the government announced it was giving more than $100 billion to nine of America's biggest banks. The Treasury Secretary at the time, Hank Paulson, assured us that all these banks were healthy. They were just taking this money for the good of the system. Well, if a little voice told you to be skeptical of that, this morning there's a big voice telling you you were right. The guy overseeing the bank rescue program, Special Inspector General Neil Barofsky, says it quickly became clear some of those institutions were not healthy at all, and that hurt the credibility of the government bailout program. Now, one of those nine banks, Bank of America, lost its CEO last week when Ken Lewis announced he's retiring. This morning's Wall Street Journal says B of A's directors plan to settle this week on an emergency CEO pick in case Lewis has to step down early. As Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson reports, Lewis is facing legal pressure.
The trouble stems from Bank of America's takeover of the investment bank Merrill Lynch last fall. Specifically, what Ken Lewis and other execs knew about Merrill bonuses and losses, and why that information wasn't passed on to B of A shareholders before they voted to approve the deal. Securities lawyer Bill Singer says Lewis is in the unenviable position of being the face of Bank of America.
I think the problem that Mr. Lewis has is while typically you would be mad at the institution, given that he had such a high-profile presence on the news, unfortunately for him, he really personalized much of the anger.
Anger that's being channeled by attorneys general around the country. New York's AG says just because Lewis is stepping down doesn't mean he won't be investigated. Lewis also faces scrutiny in North Carolina and a class action lawsuit in Ohio. And Lewis may find himself in federal court when B of A faces SEC charges in February. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson for Marketplace.
And let's do the numbers. European stocks are slightly higher this morning, less than 0.5%, while Asian markets were mostly lower earlier today. Wall Street had a bad time of it last week. Stocks lost about 2%, biggest weekly drop since early July. Remember when the Dow was threatening 10,000? Well, the Dow closed Friday at 9,487. Hundreds of airline pilots are staging a protest today at airports across Europe. They're handing out fake boarding passes that carry this warning: pilot fatigue is putting lives at risk. We get more from Stephen Beard in London.
The pilots say the current European rules that govern how long they can fly are unsafe. They're permitted to work up to 14 hours a day and sometimes longer. They can fly up to 180 hours in a three-week period. And yet, says Philipp von Schoppentauer, one of the organisers of today's protest, there's clear scientific evidence that such long hours leads to pilot fatigue.
The current EU law on pilot fatigue is potentially unsafe, unsafe for the crews, unsafe for the passengers. Yet the European institutions have done nothing for 1 year to concretely address this problem.
He says that fatigue is a factor in between 15 and 20% of air accidents. The European Commission in Brussels says it's still studying the evidence and will draw up new rules by 2011. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by The Economist, covering news and ideas from around the world and the connections between them. The Economist, on newsstands, in bookstores, and at economist.com. And by Monsanto, committed to sustainable agriculture, creating hybrid and biotech seeds designed to increase crop yields and conserve natural resources. ProduceMoreConserveMore.com.
Why does the stock market do what it does? Is it monetary bubbles inflating and popping? Is it about earnings and underlying values? Or is there something bigger? For all of time, people have looked for the secrets of cycles, from mathematics to the movements of stars. Today in the New Yorker's Money Issue, staff writer Nick Paumgarten looks into some of these cycle theories. Good morning, Nick.
Good morning, Bill.
The stars show up, also the Fibonacci sequence, made famous in the Da Vinci Code. Why do we feel the need to find patterns like these?
Well, I suppose we have a human need to find patterns in everything. It's how we hunt. It's how we escape the killer lion. It's how we plant things for the season. So we have a tendency to look for patterns in everything. I think the market often seems senseless, no matter how much research we do, it's still a mystery to us. So I think it's natural for us to seek patterns in it.
You write that these cycle theories get a lot more popular in down markets than in good times.
Yeah, that's what they tell me. I think it has to do with the fact that when things are going well, we think we're responsible for it. And when things go badly, then we want to sort of disavow responsibility for having things go to hell. And instead, we seek other explanations, sometimes sort of mystical explanations.
Your central character in your story is this former hedge fund manager who had a lot of his success in Asia, where the idea of cycles seems less far-fetched than it does in the West.
That's true. You know, he had a prediction. He called the day that was the highest of the Nikkei before it crashed in 1989. And as a result of that call and the fact that he sort of believes in these cycles, he had a very sympathetic audience in Asia, and it helped him do business there.
He used the irrational number pi.
Yes. He believes that things happen in cycles of 3,141 days, which, of course, as everyone knows, is pi times 1,000, which is 8.6 years. And the main actor in this piece, a man named Martin Armstrong, has determined that lots of different things happen according to a rhythm of 8.6 years or multiples of that, down to the day.
Well, did you find that there seems to be anything to any of these theories?
There are occasional uncanny hits. It's possible you can throw out 1,000 predictions, and when two of them hit, you can trumpet those predictions. What I think it does, it forces you to think about things in a different way. It's always healthy to think about things in a different way, think about markets in a different way. You know, perhaps there are forces at work that we don't understand. I think it's at least wise to consider the possibility.
New Yorker staff writer Nick Palmgarten, great to talk to you. I guess I'll see you again in exactly 8.6 years.
I hope so. Thank you very much.
And Nick's story is in the New Yorker's Money issue, which is out today. We always have a money issue out. It's called our website, and if you look there right now, there's a musical feature called Recession Rocks, a marketplace playlist to liven up your downturn at marketplace.org. I'm Bill Radke. Have a good Monday.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.